Cassie Walker Burke covers education in Chicago for Chalkbeat Chicago, which is one of the best sites in the country that covers education. They, of course, cover here in Chicago, and she's a frequent guest here on the program. She joins me now. Cassie, great to talk with you. Happy New Year. I guess it's too late to say Happy New Year. It's like January, whatever.
Oh, it's all right. Happy New Year to you.
Okay, so let's get into some of these stories. The big one coming out today has to do with the relationship between the Chicago police officers that are in schools. And CPD and CPS came to an agreement on what it's going to look like moving forward when it comes to school discipline and using officers in the school. What can you tell us about this?
Sure. So Chicago Public Schools has a contract now with the Chicago Police Department to basically governs the 100 or so officers that are working in schools. And if 100 sounds like a low number, remember that the way school security is handled in Chicago is the police handle, there's police officers, but then a lot of schools also have security officers that are managed under a different process, and mm-hmm. the district manages those. So we're just talking about police officers. But this is a $33 million agreement. It had been long awaited. We had been asking about it actually all fall, and it was quietly posted to a website in December, and our reporter was finally alerted to it. So really, this is a really interesting agreement because it covers access to student data, it covers training guidelines, it covers the chain of command, all of these things that we had questions about and that weren't spelled out in any sort of recent contractual agreement.
And these are important things and distinctions because we've seen far too many viral videos of police officers and student interactions. And not to say that everything that we see on the camera is what happened, but when you have police officers who are trained certain ways to deal with criminals, dealing with kids who might just be unruly, there needs to be some guidelines on how that's different than say, just arresting a bad guy on the street.
Exactly. There's a lot of questions also about what do officers do with the information they glean in schools about students? Where does that information go? And so this agreement attempts to spell out access to student data and when it's allowable or permissible. We still have some questions there. There were also questions before about which police officers were in schools and what were their backgrounds. And should police officers be in schools if they had no experience with youth, if they had no training on de-escalating conflict? And so this agreement really for the first time, and think about that, that's sort of incredible, but spells out what that training should look like mm-hmm. and who and what kind of background would be appropriate for an officer in a school.
It's mentioned as well in the story just about there are some youth-led organizations and people and kids that came forward that said they don't necessarily feel safer or safe at all when they see police officers in the school. This has been a controversial tactic by both schools and police for years, not just in Chicago, all over this country. Does this at least go a little bit further by delivering guidelines into addressing some of the concerns about safety and about police in the schools?
Well, I think guidelines are helpful in the sense of now we have a better sense of who's supposed to be in the schools and what kind of training they have. I think it remains to be seen about the relationship in different school communities to the officers. I mean, I don't think you can talk about these things in broad strokes. Different schools have different relationships with their officers. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this is handled in different school communities. Yeah. And this is a relationship that goes way back. So this goes back to the Daley era of police being in schools and the money of who pays for it being volleyed back and forth between City Hall and Chicago Public Schools. And there have been a lot of changes over time. So this is a really important moment for that relationship.
We'll pay attention to that. That's not going to happen until I think it starts in September, right? It's next year that we'll see that how this kind of contract plays out. Let's talk about some other stories that are on Chalkbeat, which are fascinating to kick off 2020. You did a great piece about shrinking schools and under enrollment. This is an issue that has plagued Chicago, and we obviously know about it because we see the headlines all the time about people leaving Chicago, leaving Illinois, but in this case, Chicago. And more often than not, that means that when school time starts, some of the schools that are in neighborhoods, mostly neighborhood schools, they're under enrolled. Maybe schools that had big numbers of occupancy have dwindled over time. How is the city dealing with this, and how big of a problem is it?
We've lost, in the past decade, 54,000 students in Chicago. And this is a big problem. And the question of how is the district dealing with it, I think, is an open one. The story basically pointed to the fact that there is no district-wide strategy for dealing with either under-enrollment, so schools that don't have enough students, or over-enrollment. So we also see schools in some neighborhoods where you have, you know, 30-plus kids in a classroom, and they're continuing to enroll that every year. And so there's really no citywide strategy that we're seeing. What we're seeing is quietly in some neighborhoods, community groups are being, there's some conversations that are happening, not even quietly in some places. The communities are trying to take control of this conversation themselves, and the school district, I think, is prodding those conversations along. But we're really not seeing an overarching strategy. And the pressure, we've seen these enrollment drops over time. That's not new. What's new is that the contract that was struck between the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools adds a new sort of financial pressure and dynamic to this conversation. On the over-enrollment side, schools could soon be penalized and have to add aides and have to pay in their budgets to add additional staffing for classes that are too full. On the under-enrollment side, we've guaranteed a social worker and a nurse in every school. If you think about that and those salaries and how they add up, and there's some high needs positions in additional schools, you're starting to talk about hundreds of thousands of dollars for each individual school. And when you have schools that have 50, 60 students, does that math make sense?
Cassie, one of the things, the elephant in the room, which none of the politicians want to talk about, it's like a hot potato, is the last mayor went in and closed 50 schools or whatever it was was the largest school closing in, I think, American history. And there were books written about it. There are still people looking at his tenure and saying that was a big failure for him. But when you hear us talking tonight, you recognize that under enrollment, something has to happen. And it doesn't seem to me that, obviously because of political purposes, the city of Chicago or Chicago Public Schools wants to go anywhere near closing schools.
This has not been a conversation that has gone well for any city. And it's happening in other places. We have to remember that a lot of urban centers are seeing populations decline as immigration patterns are changing, as the birth rate goes down. And so other cities are having these conversations. And, you know, spoiler alert, it's not going great. But there are some things that researchers have said can help ease the conversation. One is just having a straightforward public reckoning with the facts, saying this is what we're going to have to do. This is what the timeline is. And here are some different strategies that we can go about it, and then opening the process up to the public. But insofar as having that conversation and the need that it needs to happen, we're not even seeing that yet in
right.
Chicago.
Because it's a non-starter, because the minute a politician starts talking that way, they lose certain population. They lose people who may have voted for them before. They're not going to vote again. So they just stay away from it like it's not an issue.
And I think that's why I would venture to say that a community-level strategy, trying to let the community lead the conversation, is the current approach. I think the questions we have around that is if there's no deadline, if there's also no incentivizing that sort of thinking, if there's no incentivizing those programs, how is it going to happen? Now, you are seeing some really interesting things happen, and I have to say this, you know, we point this out in the article. For example, on the West Side, you see a group called West Side United, and it's a group of hospitals that are putting up money, several hundred thousand dollars, to open a community health clinic, and they're having a request for proposals, and under-enrolled elementary schools are specifically being asked to apply. And the idea is that you can merge some of these functions, create a community health clinic. That's really interesting. I think we're going to see some other ideas like that. I think the bigger question is, how do we incentivize those sorts of ideas, and how do they play into a larger strategy?
Cassie Walker-Burke is with me. She's the editor over at Chalkbeat Chicago. We're talking about education. You know, before we take our break, the way this all ties together to school funding is fascinating, because it used to be by, and it may still be the case, right, that it was by how many, by students' head, right? How many students are in school is how much money the school got. So if you are automatically under-enrolled because kids are either being yanked to selective enrollment or magnet schools or leaving the city of Chicago, there's no way for these under-enrolled schools to actually get more resources. They're stuck. So is this going to lead to at least a frank conversation about how schools are funded?
This is a very interesting piece of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's education agenda. So she has pledged to revisit the way Chicago schools are funded. And she's going to do so by kicking off. She's named a budget commission, and then there are going to be a series of meetings that are starting for the public, and I think the first one is at the end of January. And so the question on the table is really, should Chicago revisit the way it funds schools? And then the really next question is, how would we go about that? It's pretty complicated. And so I think this is going to be really interesting to watch. We're going to be covering it really closely. And you're right, schools are funded by students, and schools get a little bit of extra money for certain types of students, students with disabilities, for example. But insofar as how the state funds schools, we don't fund them in the same way. So I think this will be an interesting thing to watch. And also, what happens to all the Friends of money and the PTA money and all the money the parents raise? And is that part of the discussion? I'll be curious as a parent with children in CPS to see if that comes up and how that's handled.
Yeah, could this be the end of the catalog? You know, where we have to buy weird popcorn and coffee? All the things you do for fundraising for whatever school you send your kids to. Cassie Walker-Burke is with me. We'll take a quick break, come back, and I want to talk about why some teachers in Chicago haven't seen the raises yet. This kind of blows my mind. This has to do with veteran teachers, and I guess it's being blamed on just kind of how difficult and disorganized the city is. We'll figure all this stuff out. Cassie Walker-Burke is the editor over at Chalk Beach Chicago. We're talking education stories tonight at 720 WGN. Stay with us. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Cassie Walker-Burke is on the line. She is the editor over at Chalk Beach Chicago. Great stuff. You check out this website. It is the foremost, I would say, in the country, but here in Chicago, they do such great work, and they continue to give us perspective and analyze what's happening in schools in the Chicago and Illinois area. All right, Cassie, let's talk about the strike money. I go into my boss tomorrow and I say, or you go into your boss tomorrow and you say, I want more money, and you guys agree on it. The next paycheck, you're getting it. What is taking so long for teachers to get their pay raises they negotiated from the Chicago teacher strike?
What is taking so long is a very good question. So the raises that were negotiated for the contract that was basically ratified in November will hit teachers' paychecks at the end of February, I believe. So those are the general raises for teachers. The issue that's being held up currently are raises for veteran teachers. So these are teachers with 14 years of experience or more. And what happens on the union's previous salary schedule was that essentially after year 14, there's just very slight increases up until about year 20, you get a little bit of a bump, but then it's pretty slight. So it's sort of a cliff is how teachers have described it. And so what the union had negotiated was extra money each year that would go specifically toward those raises. But what happened is they didn't really nail it down before the contract was ratified, and they agreed they deal with it a little bit later. Mm. And now the holdup is that the city wants to issue those raises in the form of an annual bonus. So the city's not walking back on the money, but it's saying, like, we would like to distribute those as a bonus that we're giving to these teachers.
It's easier for the paperwork, maybe, or accounting, or whatever they're trying to do.
Well, right. It's easier for the paperwork, but I think the real issue is that what the union wants is the union wants the raises to go into a base salary. Why? Because each year the union has negotiated cost of living raises on top of the base salary. And if your base salary is increasing each year, it's just a simple mathematics equation. You're going to get more money.
Right,
that 3% is going to mean more. And so it's trying to get that extra money for its residents. I mean, for its teachers.
Yeah.
But on the city side, if you look at CPS's budget, and if you look at the financial constraints in the budget that Lori Lightfoot inherited, a ballooning teachers' contract every year, and this adds up to a lot of money. You're talking about 9,000 teachers, roughly, that qualify, that fall into this veteran category. That makes it a pretty unpredictable and unwieldy contract, and it wasn't something it sounds like they were planning on. Mm. And so I think that both sides have a pretty strong position in what's going to happen. Right now, as of the end of last week, the mayor was holding pretty firm on her position. The union so far doesn't seem to be budging on this point, but hopefully they will figure it out soon, and we'll be reporting on
it. Yeah, that should be figured out. The idea that they're both being tense and holding ground after the strike and everything that we went through in Chicago is kind of annoying, but I guess that's business as usual. It's just, they're striking even when they're not striking. All right, so let's get to the what to expect in 2020, because that's the story we got to watch as to how the negotiation and the teachers' contract can affect the Chicago Public Schools budget. The other issue, and we see this from Governor Pritzker, and we see this from Mayor Lightfoot as well, the big ticket item this year for schools is early education. They want universal pre-K. Is that on the top? Is that what we're going to expect in 2020?
Well, we're already seeing the early phases of universal pre-K in Chicago. So, you know, this was something that Rahm Emanuel set into motion before he left office. And Lori Lightfoot has continued the plan so far. It's not entirely clear how she's going to switch it up, how her administration might change. There's been some issues with the way the money's been funded. There's a lot of questions right now about what will happen, what's the future of universal pre-K in Chicago. On the state side, Governor Pritzker has pledged to do to try to pave a path to universal pre-K in his first term. Illinois just got a lot of money from the feds, about $40 million, to really start planning out and addressing some of the fundamental problems in its early education system. So I think we're going to see a lot of momentum on the state side in early ed. It's going to be interesting to see how the city, whether the Lightfoot administration sticks with the Rahm Emanuel plan or whether the mayor decides to go her own way on early ed.
When you think of 2020, what stories do you think of that are going to have an impact in this year? I mean, for when it comes to schools, is it?
Oh, there's so many. It's such a great topic right now. I mean, I think that we're going to see we're seeing work already beginning in earnest on the curriculum initiative. So Chicago has said they're going to redo the curriculum from soup to nuts for K-12 and in several different subjects, and that they're going to have teachers writing part of the curriculum, which is actually a departure for how a lot of cities handle curriculum. They kind of just like buy it.
That's how someone else does it, right? Hoffman Mifflin, or what they do it, right? The idea that we would do
right, you buy it, right? Yeah. And so what Chicago's saying is that not every school has the money to purchase the up-to-date materials, and that teachers are often spending a lot of their time trying to put stuff together, and that a lot of curriculum, and, you know, research bears this out, a lot of curriculum that's written off the shelf isn't culturally relevant, isn't relevant to students in an urban district. And so this is something we're going to be watching closely. And really, what does it mean for students? I mean, ultimately, we're really interested in what do decisions mean for students, and are they learning? Another thing we're going to be watching closely, you know, Chicago a few years ago was the fastest improving district in the country, one of them. It had this incredible improvement story if you looked over a decade of test scores and achievement, and this was according to pretty much any test you looked at. And so we've seen those scores flatline a little bit, and so are we going to continue to see that? We're still seeing growth, but, you know, we've seen some of the overall trends start to flatten a little bit. So what are we going to see this year? I think that's really interesting. I think the Lightfoot administration's education agenda, as it comes in more into focus, is going to be something to pay attention to. I think you know, we have questions also about, you're seeing some really interesting things starting to happen between the district and city colleges with dual enrollment and trying to have more students get onto that college path. Are we going to see those trends continue? So there's a lot of great stories in Chicago schools right now. So
elected school board.
We'll be following them.
Cassie,
oh, yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's a huge one. Exactly. Huge one. We'll be watching that too.
Well, Cassie, I love reading your stuff. Chalk Beach Chicago is the website. Cassie Walker-Burke is the editor, and talking all things education. And we'll have you back on soon. Cassie, thanks for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.